Welcome to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, where we discuss all things money, because whether we like it or not, money matters. And one of the most important money matters is tax, especially when you work for yourself or you have a side hustle that earns you some extra cash. And let me tell you, navigating the tax maze when you don't just have an ILP5 from an employer, it is really, really challenging. So I've invited a tax expert, Andre Botma, onto this week's podcast to chat about how to optimize your tax deductions as a freelancer or how to manage the books when you are earning an extra income from a side hustle. So thank you, Andre. Welcome to the podcast, My Money, My Lifestyle podcast. You work for yourself. You don't work for yourself. You've got a side hustle. So maybe just tell the listeners a little bit about what you do.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for listening. My name is Andre Botma. I run a YouTube channel called Andre Botma Tax. I also work full-time in the tax industry as a tax consultant. And then on the side, I also do some consultations from time to time and write tax articles for Banker X. So that's, yeah.
So you and I are similar but different. So I work completely for myself. My whole business is myself. But you are the other person who has an employer but then has developed a side business using your skills. So I think between the two of us, we've probably got quite a good understanding of what it is like to live in this world of self-employment. And, you know, I find that so many of my listeners and readers are self-employed. I think it's becoming more and more common. And, you know, whether it's a freelancer, it's permanently working for themselves, or like you have a side gig. And they all struggle with navigating the tax rules, you know, especially around tax deductions. What is a tax deduction? What is it? When do I need to pay tax? How does provisional tax work? So maybe just give us a little bit of kind of the top tips that you feel that people earning their own income, that income that isn't on that ILP5, what are the top tips that they need to have?
Yeah, I think the best way to start, I think what happens often in the industry is people will go from full-time employment and then go completely self-employed. So you are used to the employer deducting the pay as you earn from your salary. Everything is done for you. Now, as soon as you start either earning a commission or you're an independent contractor, a sole proprietor, now it changes, because now you have to do your own, not only your bookkeeping, or you need to have at least a bookkeeper, so that now your bank statements are organized, your income and expenses are summarized for you on a monthly basis, so that you've got a good idea of how much profit are you making on a monthly basis and also on an annual basis, because that's going to determine how much provisional tax and essentially how much annual tax you have to pay. A good bookkeeper will also, if you have a good relationship with them, they'll be able to tell you what can and can't be deducted for income tax purposes. So then you've got a good idea. At least that's a good start. The other thing that I strongly suggest commission earners or independent contractors, what they must do, sole proprietors, is to set aside 10 to 20% of your income aside for tax purposes. What often happens, and I say 10 to 20% because you can take advantage of all those deductions, and that's average what people pay for tax. The reason I say that is that type of income is often a tax trap. And what I mean by that is you are used to your pay as you earn being deducted automatically, but now you have to fork out that money when you pay provisional tax twice a year and then on your annual tax return. If you do save that money on the side, it is there, and you don't have to worry about forking out 20, 30, 50 grand to SARS.
So hear you. You know, Andre, I remember the first time I had to pay provisional tax, I'd done exactly that. I'd been working for an employer, then I went freelance, and this shock of this bill that came, and I remember thinking I could buy a couch with this. That's what I remember clearly thinking, and I had to go and make this massive withdrawal from my account. And I think if you haven't put that money away, I come across a lot of people who have to actually dip into credit to settlement.
Correct, 100%. And SARS is, I don't know whether this is legislated, but SARS considers themselves a preferential creditor. That means that so you pay SARS first. SARS want your money first before you can go ahead and pay your other loans and things like that. So yeah, SARS is definitely, I understand when people would take out a loan in order to pay SARS, because they can literally tell the bank, you know, if you don't act on their final demand, they can take the money. So it's important to do that.
And, you know, that has actually happened to us before. Was my husband had a dispute with SARS, and SARS had forgotten that they had a dispute, lodged a dispute or something had happened, and they actually went and took the money out of his bank account. I mean, some people can do it. And the power of SARS is so huge that I think to sit there and just hope that it's going to work out somewhere along the way is very, very, very dangerous. And it was interesting to me that you spoke about the 10 to 20% as well. So, you know, I suppose in your first year, it is difficult. I mean, obviously now what I do is I look at what my tax was last year and I've got some idea and I allocate I put that away immediately. So I have a bank account, and on my bank account, I have little savings pockets, and one of them is provisional tax, the other is VAT, because I started my business so many years ago, it was VAT registered in those days.
Right.
I think it was 30,000 a year you had to earn to be VAT registered. And I put all of those away to make sure that I have it. But I suppose, yes, in your first year, it's difficult to know. So you reckon maybe 10 to 20%. And if you don't get such a big tax bill, well, you've got a little bit of savings.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's one of the first. Definitely get a good bookkeeper on your side. Get a if you're small, I suppose you can still manage it by downloading your bank statements yourself and circling what is my business expenses. But one other recommendation I have is to get a second bank account so that you separate your personal finances from your business finances, because obviously for your side business or your commission earnings, and then take the net of it and take that as a salary that you put into your, because you don't want to mix your personal transactions with your business transactions there, because then you simplify the accounting, not just for yourself, but also for whoever does your tax, if you don't do the tax yourself.
That is, and of course, if you haven't incorporated your business, you're just a sole proprietor, you can open up as an individual's bank account. And I think, you know, I've got quite a few. I mean, obviously, you get really low bank accounts like Capitec, they're really low cost. But FNB's also brought out that business banking. I think they call it zero banking or zero business.
Yes. Zero. Yeah, I think it's called zero business.
Yeah, and it's specifically for sole proprietors. So, and it's got no monthly banking fee. So those are some really nice. You don't have to. I think what's important to realize, you don't have to open a business bank account and spend all this money, because I can tell you that's quite a shock. I have a business bank account because I have incorporated, and maybe we can talk a little bit later about when you make that decision. And boy, I promise you, it's a big jump between paying for your personal bank account versus business. But yeah, I mean, definitely separating those two is like, to me, it's like 101. You don't even start trying to put them together.
Yeah, but a lot of people start off like that and only later on learn, oh, I must separate them. Especially when you don't start a company, register a CIPC company. Mm. So, yeah, definitely that's one of the things to do.
Yeah. And I wanted to also just ask you specifically around, I mean, one of the reasons we're having this podcast is the interest in the home office. We're having a discussion on Twitter, like when is a home office deductible and when is it not, especially if you're an employee. So maybe that's an interesting one. Let's use you as an example.
Yeah.
Myself. So my entire office, you know, I've got I do all the deductions. I can deduct, I think I come in my office space, but I think I get up to 15% of the running costs of my home are deducted. But it's different if you're an employee, if you've got a side income. So maybe let's talk about how you do it.
Yeah. So if you're a standard employee, you obviously get the letter from your employer to say that, you know, you work mainly at home, and the word mainly technically means that you work 50% or more time from home. So that's important. Then in terms of the deductions, What I can claim is specifically either a portion of my rent or a portion of my bond interest. And that is determined by taking the size of your home office and divide that by the size of your home. So that might be 10 over 100. So that's 10% of the rent or 10% of the interest. You can also claim repairs and maintenance. And as far as I understand, you can claim electricity and rates because that's part of the property costs. What you can't claim as a standard employee is what you would, and the argument that I think the reason why it's there, why you can't claim telephone and internet and stationery, is because a normal business would provide those things for the employee. And so that's why the commission earner slash independent contractor can deduct those additional Section 11A expenses because they fork out those expenses themselves. Now, I'm, as far as, yes, the budget speech in 2020, basically they said that they are looking at changing regulation to allow for home office expenses to be expanded a bit, because now people are paying for telephone out of their own pocket. They are paying for stationery out of their own pocket and for internet, and they might not get reimbursed by the company. And traditionally, you can't claim those expenses if you're a normal employee, but that's definitely a change that I hope SARS is considering for the future.
Yeah, and of course, it always gets tricky if your employer does give you money to cover that, whether it's a fringe benefit or not. So it can get quite into a difficult space. But I mean, how does one, for example, you, when you have a full-time job, but then you've got a side gig, side hustle that actually earns you an income, and obviously you have expenses in earning that income. So how do you then allocate that against, and how do you put it in your tax return? I think that to me gets quite messy. So, you know, when you are, an employee, but you also have an extra income, how do you allocate those expenses?
Yeah, I think on the tax return itself, practically your RP5 is automatically separate from your side business. What you need to make sure of is, obviously, rent can get a bit muddled if you. So, I think the general practice prevailing is you deduct the expenses that is directly linked to your trade income. So, but for example, if I'm just making my YouTube income, for example, might be like maybe it's R1,000 a month. My YouTube expenses just maybe the internet cost and the rent. Then I'm only going to deduct those expenses against the YouTube income and the tax consulting income, and not bother at all with claiming normal home office expenses later, further down in my tax return. It simplifies things a bit to claim the expenses directly to the income. I would not personally claim losses unless I have a lot of expenses and not much income. Then it's legitimate to claim the loss for the year and then see if you can carry forward the loss. But if you're just making, if you're not really making a profit, just directing the expenses that you have to that income, that would be the simplest way to do it, and not muddle it further down and trying to split, because otherwise you're complicating it for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, and this is why, of course, it gets challenging, because it does get a bit, it can get, especially in your scenario where you're an employee and an employee and self-employed, at the same time. Mm-hmm. And one of the other ones that I also get asked quite a lot is kind of obviously, so say now we're talking the freelance world, we're talking about people who work full-time for themselves. They often will have meetings because they work from home. This is, by the way, pre-COVID maybe, but they would have meetings at coffee shops, at whatever. They would actually go to meetings. How do those tax deductions work? What can you deduct for travel expenses and all of that?
So travel is quite simple. If you must differentiate between what was actual business travel And what was private kilometer travel, holidays and things like that. And you need to keep a logbook if you are doing business related travel. And normally your split might be 40% business, 60% private. So that means 40% of your car related costs can be deducted against your commission or your freelance. Let's just refer to freelancing, to your freelancing income. For specifically entertaining clients and gifting clients, you know, sometimes you do a transaction and you want to gift them something, you can deduct them. But over the last few years, SARS have become really difficult with allowing those expenses because they ask for a specific, you must keep a schedule. And this schedule is like, you keep the date, who and what client you saw on the date, the place that you went to, and the amount. If you don't keep such a schedule, SARS can go back and say, you know, that 30,000 rand in entertainment and gifting that you claimed, we're going to disallow that because you couldn't provide a schedule for that. So, and most people, when they get that thing, we have to put together a schedule, they don't even bother with then claiming for that because it's just so much hassle. But if you are in the habit of keeping a diary, and then you write down, this is where I went, and this is a client that I had a coffee with. That would be the easiest way to go about claiming entertainment and gifts. And both of those specific expenses, SARS can ask for such a schedule from you.
I mean, I find when it comes down to tax, actually, the bottom line is record keeping. Everything's about record keeping. I use my phone. I've got OneDrive on my phone. I take a picture of the invoice. Mm-hmm. I immediately, you know, save the image, note where it was, date, time, whatever. And that's a way of trying to keep track because it is a nightmare. It's a nightmare trying to keep track of all of these expenses and things. So trying to find a system, I think. Just on that, you know, what accounting packages? So, I mean, I happen to bank with F&B and I use their small banking package, which is a little cumbersome, to be honest, but it is brilliant because it just generates, because it's a business account, it just generates my books for me, if that makes sense. But there's a lot of them. I know there was Wave, but Wave is no longer available in South Africa for some reason. But are they just like good low cost or no cost invoicing and expense packages?
Well, I jumped onto Wave last year, and if you were on Wave before they made the change that South Africans can't use it anymore, you can still use it if you jumped on Wave ahead of time, and that's what I still use. I think Sage Accounting, people can definitely use, and Xero is the other one that I know is quite often used. There is a tax solution that if you fall into that category, your turnover is below a million, meaning your sales or your invoicing is below a million, and you are not in the professional space, meaning you are not a doctor, you're not a lawyer, you're not an accountant, you're not a, you're not an educator, so you're not a professional in that sense. You can register for turnover tax, and turnover tax is an amazing tax system where you don't even have to do bookkeeping. You just need to keep track of the income that you've been earning from that venture, and you don't have to keep track of expenses, and the taxes are really, really low. So that's another recommendation I would make to people. The only downside of it is you can't claim losses. So if you have a incorporated company, if you have a sole proprietor and you are making losses, it's perhaps not the best solution. But if you are making profits and you can legitimately register for turnover tax, I mean, if you're making a turnover of a million, this is just an example, the maximum amount of tax you would ever pay is about 16,000 rand on a turnover of a million.
Yeah, which is very low. But
so,
I remember when I looked at it, it was quite specific and it tended to be around industries that had quite high inputs. It would be like you have a plumbing business or a... It definitely didn't cover personal services at all. So because it'd be very nice if you use turnover tax. But
yes, it would be great because then I could register for turnover tax, for example.
cars would lose a lot of money overnight.
yeah. I think within the current, I think it's just sad that they implemented this law in 2012 and have not touched it since. They have not improved it. They have not widened it. They have not allowed more types of businesses to register for it. Even if you're a personal services provider and perhaps you already have three or more employees, you still can't register because it's about the service that you are providing. So for me, SaaS have been really bad at widening the types of businesses that can. I think small business corporation still has a that's a good piece of legislation, but turnover tax, they've been really lax on that, and that's one area that could save people plenty of tax. But now, because of that limitation, you've got a lot of industries can't register for it.
I just feel, Andre, that they're not really that interested in giving more tax breaks. That's kind of weird. They're looking more to collect. Well, we're not going to
bother. Yeah, I'm going to go off on a slight tangent here. That is a national tax problem. If in economics, there's what we call the Laffer curve, and in the Laffer curve, it shows you that after a certain point, if you are taxed too much, it actually reduces the tax income that a country can generate. Now, I think Thito Mboweni realized this last year and actually said company tax is going to drop to 27%. Income tax for individuals are also going to get a tax saving. So they're realizing that they are teeter-tottering on that tipping point of a Laffer curve. So in order to still generate more tax revenue, they actually have to do the inverse and give more tax breaks, which is a funny thing to say, but it's accurate.
Well, what it does is it brings more people into the tax net.
Exactly.
Widens the tax net. Because at the moment, people are, and maybe that's actually maybe the next point I want to make, is that I know a lot of people who have a side business, whatever it is, they may be Airbnb or they're moonlighting their skills, who do not declare that income to SARS. I suppose that is a money that SARS is not getting in. And maybe if taxes were more friendly, they wouldn't mind paying a little bit of tax on it. They just want to pay so much because when they add it to their other
salary,
their full-time salary. So maybe explain that as well, that if you are moonlighting or you're getting a bit of extra income, it gets added to your normal salary and just pushes you into another tax bracket.
Yeah, it could push you into another tax bracket. And that's why I say rental income is often a tax trap, because people don't make provision for the fact that they are going to need to pay tax on that extra income. That is why I also advise many people, when they run a side business, a rental income enterprise, you don't have to make profit unless you absolutely have to, because if you're making profit, you're going to obviously pay the tax. So as long as my YouTube thing at home is creating an income, I'm going to generate certain expenses that will make my YouTube videos better, but that I can claim from SARS and not have to pay. The issue that SARS have with the additional income people are earning is the tax system is currently on that type of income is completely on a trust basis. So SARS is trusting the average taxpayer to declare the income and the expenses. Unfortunately, SARS do not have, contrary to popular belief, SARS do not have direct access to your bank account. They can only request from the bank with certain legal parameters to take money if you have not answered a final demand, but they don't have access to your bank accounts. And that is one thing that if SARS were to have access to your bank accounts to see, are you declaring what you're supposed to be declaring, a lot more people will be found out. They simply don't. So it's up to the taxpayer and the tax practitioners of the taxpayers. It's up to the taxpayer to be honest and open with SARS and say, listen, I did make a profit on my Airbnb of 20,000 Rand, and the taxes The extra tax on that is going to be about 2,500 rand to pay, whatever the case may be. So,
yeah. That's an interesting one, because I think two things one has to be careful. First of all, there are always some angry spouses out there who can blow the whistles. That's one of the big whistleblowers for SARS. And the other is, I think what they are doing is they, of course, they're muscling up. They've got another, what, 3 billion were given, I think it was, in the budget. I can't remember the exact number to beef up. And one of the things they're doing is going on to Airbnb and looking and saying, oh, that's an interesting one. Let me find out about this person. And they do it. They'll even go and they look at luxury cars. They look at property assets. They're looking at insurance as well, and saying, well, why are you insuring for this when you don't have it? So, you know, to me, what I would rather see is SARS saying, coming up with a new dispensation for side income and saying, we'll ring fence that. We won't add it and push up your average tax rate, because, you know, it almost disincentivizes people to, you know, to come forward. And then at least maybe you're getting SARS knows about it and getting a little bit of it, or just at least know about it, and it brings it in somehow into the tax net. So I think those are some of the policy challenges ahead of it. But I, you know, I would be, it is, I think if you're not declaring it, you're always sitting on the, just on the edge that if they do find out, this, you're in trouble.
No, I mean, I've worked for 11 years now in the industry. And one of the things that happens is you leave the dragon alone, which means you're working for yourself. You don't file your tax returns. And in the first year or two, you're dealing with a small dragon. Sometimes it breathes fire. And you think about this dragon that you have to deal with. I have to file my tax returns. I have to catch up my tax. And then come year five, come year six, you approach a tax practitioner. You have not filed your returns for 5 years. And now you've got a 100,000, 200,000 big dragon breathing fire in your face because you have not filed those years. And then you've got a problem. And that's a massive problem some self-employed, some freelancers are dealing with. And then I have to file a tax compromise, and SARS doesn't want to compromise because then SARS don't get enough money in. So it's quite a bad cycle to be in if you're not dealing with SARS the way that you're supposed to be dealing with them. It can become a dragon that you don't want to face.
And of course, you've got to pay the tax practitioner as well to sort out all your mess. So it becomes an added expense. And I mean, just on the on the rental income, and I mean, I think that's an important point, even with Airbnb or rental income, is that, you know, you could declare it, but you have so many expenses against it. So you can deduct interest on that property. Mm-hmm. You can deduct maintenance, deduct any, you know, the electricity, water. There's so many things that you can deduct. And I think that what you're saying makes a lot of sense. It's like, find the expenses to offset it, but don't not declare it.
Yeah, the other thing is don't also spend more than you should. I mean, some people want to pay no tax, but they will go out of their way to fix something that doesn't need to be fixed. You're always spending more than the tax. So what I mean by that is, in order to save 10,000 rand in tax, you would need to spend 40 grand. If you don't need to spend 40 grand, if the place is fine, you are from a cash flow point of view, 40 grand less versus 10 grand less. And this is the argument I sometimes have with people who keep bonds on their rental properties, because you are paying 100,000 rand in interest to not pay 20,000 rand to SARS. And people make the argument that the tenant pays the bond. But on the other hand, you've got a bad tenant. If the market crashes and you lose, and you know, for some reason that property gets foreclosed on, or whatever the case may, you take on additional risk for keeping on a bond. So that's often it's not really it is a good argument to have, and there's a lot of different opinions on it. But if you're a conservative person who don't like to deal with debt or high risk things like that, it's often better to just take the tax knock than trying to keep a bond on a property.
I mean, I see the same attitude, Andre, sometimes of travel allowances as well. You know, people buy the, well, I think they use the travel allowances as an excuse to buy a bigger car. But it's the same thing. You're ending up spending a lot more money than you're actually benefiting from the tax break. So it is that mindset. There seems to be something about paying tax that people hate so much that they'd rather go and pay it off to somebody else than the tax. And but that isn't always logical.
Yeah. And it's unfortunately, it's the tax climate in South Africa. I mean, if you go to the Nordic countries, the Scandinavian countries, where the tax rates are 10 to 20% higher than South Africa, the taxes, imagine paying 20% more tax in South Africa, maybe 5% more VAT. That would be absolutely ridiculous. People will leave SA and not come back. But in Nordic countries, because the tax morality there is so good, on both sides, both from the taxpayer and the government, it just works. You know, people are willing to pay the tax because they get so much free things from the government that they are incentivized to pay the tax. Unfortunately, the tax climate in South Africa does not allow that. And that's why people are so, that's why people try to, you know, there's a joke on Twitter about tax evasion that, because it's a bit of a long story, but I write tax evasion articles, but it's just a joke because that's the climate in SA. People want to pay as little or no tax at all, even if it's more expensive for their pocket.
What was interesting, though, is what we saw in this national budget, the budget in February, was they actually showed South Africa's personal tax rate versus our peers. Now, that's a big difference. We're not a Nordic country. We're one of the BRICS, and we pay substantially more personal income tax as a percentage. So our personal income
is a
very high percentage of tax in South Africa versus other countries at our developmental stage. And I think that's that last curve that you're talking about, that we know that, we feel that. That is why we can't go further than this, because we actually are at the top end, quite well within the top end of countries in our developmental stage, and certainly in terms of getting back from the tax, from government in terms of services. So I wanted to end off with just one question, which I also get quite often, and it's something I actually went through 2 years ago. I've had my business for 14 years as a sole proprietor, and I decided to incorporate. I'm now a Pty Limited, and I did it for various reasons. But at what point does one make that decision, either as a full-time self-employed person, you're a full-time business that you're working on, or even as somebody with a side business? And when do you make that decision to move from a sole proprietor to a Pty?
I think one of the nice benchmarks is, do you have any employees? Or do you have any partners that want to partner up with you? Those are two questions. And if those two things are not at all in your circle and not going to be there for 5 years, it's very unnecessary, in my opinion, to register for a company. And let me tell you why. If you are a sole director employee, which means that you are the sole director of a company, but you're also the employer of a company, number one, you are, quote unquote, the personal service provider. You provide the service for all your clients as the employee and the director. So automatically, SBC is not an option for you. You can't register as a small business corporation. That means your tax is flat 28%. Now, if you decide to take a dividend out instead of a salary, so let's say you take a salary, but you also take dividends tax plus the 28% tax that a company pays averages out to be 42.4% of tax, which is actually what you are paying. And for an individual, you might only be at the 35% tax bracket, which means marginally you only pay 25% tax. That is much less than 42.4%. So just from a tax point of view, if you're a one-man show with no employees and no partners who want to partner up and do business with you, or you are not doing any business-to-business transactions, running it as a sole proprietor will be more tax beneficial than in a company. The other thing, obviously, one of the other reasons for not starting a company or incorporating a company is admin costs and additional compliance. So once you register for CIPC, all of a sudden you have to comply to the Companies Act. Once you start employing people, now you have to comply to three different labor acts. Okay. So you have to pay CIPC costs. You might get a secretarial company that does your secretary for you. You have to pay that. You have to file annual tax returns. You have to file provisional tax returns. You have to file your own tax returns. You pile that up, that can easily be 10 grand a year that you don't have to fork out if you're a sole proprietor. Now let's look at the benefits of being of registering a company. I think once you get big enough and it makes sense for you, you might have business to business contracts that somebody might want to do business with you. The benefit is number one, you can apply for things like business loans. Banks are more willing to loan money to a registered company than an individual. Also, the individual is protected from creditors. So if the company makes a lot of loans for their business, the individual is often protected from those claims. But also, I think the separate legal entity makes sense when you need a separate legal entity. It makes no sense when you don't need it. So the argument to say, oh, I need a company because of that separate legal entity, my question to you is, do you need the separate legal entity? Those are the questions. Do you have enough income to warrant all the administrative and additional compliance and costs that goes with them? But if you are partnering up with somebody who want to do business with you, and because the thing is, a partnership is a ship that sinks easily. and because it doesn't survive you, it doesn't survive the other partner. You have to form a new partnership when one partner leaves or dies. And so it's much easier if you start a company to survive. And also the other thing is, it's very difficult to sell a sole proprietor. You can't. So if you have a company that has a name and you're building a brand and that brand is getting big, and eventually you want to sell it before you die, having a company would be another reason to start or to get incorporated. So those are the things I would look at.
And I see, I see quite often, I said this was a long journey for me. It wasn't something I did lightly at all. But for various reasons, one of mine is a big business to business. And also withholding tax if you're a freelance, there's a whole lot of reasons. But I see so many people saying, I want to start a business, and immediately going off because it's so easy now to register a business without understanding all of these consequences. And then suddenly they're like, oh, I didn't know I had to do this. I didn't know I had to do that. I didn't know I had to get audited. I mean, you have to get audited financials, all of this stuff. They just didn't know that. So I think it's been tantalizingly easy to incorporate. And I don't think anyone's telling people the full consequences of it. So I think it is an important discussion that people need to have and understand before they take that step.
Yeah, I play, this is a funny analogy, but I play Dungeons and Dragons on a weekly basis. And it's like, you as a character, you hear how good plate armor is. Now plate armor is, but you don't realize, hey, it gives you great protection. So the company is a great idea. However, it weighs you down. Mm-hmm. And plate armor, you can't go swimming in plate armor. You're going to drown. Yeah. And so your company, you need to be ready. Your company need to be ready to wear plate armor.
Yeah.
yeah. And understand the consequences of wearing plate armor.
Yeah. I think it's a fantastic analogy. I like that one. I think that works well. Are you ready to wear the plate armor? And I think people think they are because they perceive themselves and their business in the way they'd like it to be, but maybe it's not quite there yet.
And also people feel like because it is CIPC registered, it is a real business, and therefore a sole proprietor is not a real business. And that is so far from the truth. Because a lot of plumbers, a lot of electricians, a lot of them, even some medical practitioners, run their businesses as a trading as for decades without even incorporating.
Well, I want to say, Andre, it's been fantastic chatting to you, and I think we must definitely maybe touch base again later on in the year, and just chat a little bit more about the tax aspects of having your own business. or any other quite frankly. We'll figure out a few more topics. But for the listeners, if you want to find out more about Andre, there's on YouTube, he's got his YouTube channel, Andre Botma Tax, which has got a lot of really, really great content that you can catch up on. And but of course, that doesn't always replace having somebody who knows tax, just by the way. I think, especially as a small business, I think also is useful to have a tax practitioner as well, but at least it gives you some good information as well for your personal taxes. So, Andre, thanks so much for sharing your time with us today.
You've been listening to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, featuring contributors of the City Press Personal Finance Pages.